Welcome to Hey Have You Read This, the weekly podcast where we discuss the latest books from the best writers. You're joined by writer and author Hayley Savar.
Hello.
And literary publicist Madeline Ryan. Hello. Today we're discussing The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart, the debut novel from Australian author Holly Ringland. Some trigger warnings before we begin. This book does touch on death of a loved one, trauma, and emotional and physical abuse. 9-year-old Alice Hart grows up in an isolated, idyllic home between sugarcane fields and the sea, where her mother's enchanting flowers and their hidden messages shelter her from the dark moods of her father. When tragedy irrevocably changes her life, Alice goes to live with her grandmother she never knew existed, on an Australian native flower farm that gives refuge to women who, like Alice, are lost or broken. In the Victorian tradition, every flower has a meaning, and as she settles into her new life, Alice uses this language of native flowers to say the things that are too hard to speak. As she grows older, family secrecy, a devastating betrayal, and a man who's not all he seems combine to make Alice realize that there are some stories that flowers alone cannot tell. If she is to have the freedom she craves, she must find the courage to possess the most powerful story she knows. Her own. So, Hayley, have you read this?
I have. I just recently finished it, actually, a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I did enjoy it. I think it's a heavy novel. I think it touches on a lot of grief, trauma, obviously. So at times I felt, you know, like I had to put it down and be like, oh my God, this is a lot.
Towards closer to the end, I think, for me personally, I found that I had to put it down a little bit and be like, oof.
This is a lot.
This is a lot.
And I think you and I aren't really probably used to reading novels that have that kind of heaviness.
No, definitely not.
Themes of grief and especially domestic violence.
Mm.
But I think Holly did it really well, though. Like, I think she wrote, because she obviously is speaking a lot from her own experience as well.
Yeah. And I feel like as we start discussing the book, I feel like it'll become clear to whoever may be listening whether this book is for them in regards to the, you know, trauma, emotional and physical abuse.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, I mean, personally, I felt like a lot of her childhood trauma didn't really affect me that much. Obviously, it was sad to read about.
Yeah.
But it was definitely the emotional abuse at the end.
The emotional abuse, I agree.
Was, like, a very big trigger
for
me.
Yeah, with her partner.
Yeah. And that, I just want to be very open about that. Because it does get quite heavy towards the end. It's still quite a small part, really.
Oh, it's not the whole crux of the novel. Like, it is the ending of the book where she's in this really toxic relationship. Mm. But her father, Alice's father, is also really toxic as well. Mm-hmm. So she's had these toxic male figures throughout her whole life, because we follow Alice over the span of 20 years. And, like, there's a lot of growth and a lot of healing that comes into that as well. But we watched the Gardening Australia segment with Holly in it. And fell in love with the story and thought, wow, what an amazing woman. The illustrations as well that were done in it. And she was talking about how she personally had, you know, a lot of male perpetrated violence in her life. And that was why she wrote the book and, like, had the theme of flowers.
You can definitely tell, as much as I found it hard yet turning the page at certain points.
Yeah.
You can tell that it's been written from someone who has lived through those experiences, and therefore you do get a very honest take on it, and she writes really beautifully.
Doesn't she? It's very poetry almost.
At the end of the day, if I didn't like it, and it was too heavy, I wouldn't have finished it, but I did.
Even, like, the opening, like, just to read the opening line, that this is what I was like, oh my God, here we go.
Yeah.
It was like, in the weatherboard house at the end of the lane, 9-year-old Alice Hart sat at her desk by the window and dreamed of ways to set her father on fire. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And I do like that you brought up the whole fire thing. Throughout the whole book, there is this massive theme of, I guess, because Alice is, we start off when she's 9 years old. So she's quite young. She doesn't understand why her dad's a dick. She doesn't understand all these things. You know. She reads to try and understand her life, because her mum doesn't really talk to her. She talks through flowers.
Yeah.
It's a big theme throughout the whole thing. No one talks to her. No one explains things to her. And she sort of, she sees the transformative power that fire has.
Yes.
From the get-go, we see her, you know, obviously in Australia, bushfires encourage new seed growth and nutrient-rich soil. Obviously not in, you know, catastrophic bushfires,
well,
but
there's
burn-offs.
Purposeful burns up.
And, yeah, and, you know, like, we see a lot of stories about how, like, monarch butterflies use fires to, I don't even remember, but to, like, create new life.
Yes, yes.
Basically, like, that you could be reborn through fire.
Yeah.
And so she kind of believes that...
metaphor.
Yeah, yeah, that metaphor that
yeah.
through fire she can fix her dad.
Yeah.
And I love that we see this immature child who's just trying to understand the world.
Yeah.
And I assume, like, honestly, from the first page, I instantly got Matilda vibes.
From
little baby Alice.
Yeah.
Like, she just wants to understand the world, and she once her dad leaves for the day, she will walk into town. She's like quite far away from town. She'll like put her backpack on, and I just see Matilda with her little, like, red...
just curious about the world. Yeah.
Their little, like, red... what are they called? Little red wagon or something?
Yeah, the pulley,
walking with her books, going into the library and sitting there and reading books.
Yeah.
Just to make sense of the world.
Yeah.
I love that, because although there is a lot of grief and she's dealing with a lot of trauma in her life, you still see that innocent, curious, little girl with so much personality. Yeah. And I liked that because it makes it worth the more darker bits.
I agree, yeah. Just talking about fire as a theme and, like, the renewal of life, you know, Phoenix rising from the ashes type thing, there's a lot of that throughout the book. But obviously the main part of this book in terms of, like, a metaphoric thing is flowers. And Holly was talking about how she used the book The Language of Flowers, and she was really interested in that, about, you know, we send roses for love on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, and in, like, Victorian times, there were certain bouquets you sent for, you know, sorry for your loss, like, my condolences, or congratulations on a marriage or something, you know. There was specific, there was a language.
Yeah, sorry. I really ran over my notes.
I liked that, though. I found that interesting because there is such a stark difference these days. We don't appreciate native flowers.
No,
I don't.
We don't.
Think. It's such a older generation thing.
Actually, it's becoming, you know, like, just with flowers, just not about the book, but, like, flowers in general.
Spring has sprung.
Well, it's actually becoming quite big now for native bouquets. Like, I've noticed a big turn, like, in weddings.
Yeah, I love a native bouquet.
There's, like, the baby eucalyptus with, like, the protea things, although I think they're from Africa, but, like, there's a little bit of baby's breath. The wattles, you know, like, everything. So it's really interesting that that's becoming a thing. But anyway, back to the novel.
You mentioned that I will put it in the show notes, but so basically Hayley approached me with this book and was like, I think we should review The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart. And at first, I'm not the biggest fan of Australian fiction.
Neither am I, to be honest.
Yes. To be fair, though, I haven't read that much, but you know, I like escaping, right, into a different world that I haven't
been in before.
And that I'm not used to, you know, like, as an example, Trent Dalton,
Boy Swallows Universe,
wrote about, you know, the Yatla drive-ins, which are 15 minutes from my house.
No.
And I'm just like, no, that's not, I don't want to read about the Yatla drive-ins. Like, I'm so sorry. I know he's a great writer and I love his writing.
So do I,
You know, like, in, like, he writes The Australian as well.
Yes.
I like reading that.
Yes.
I'm not discrediting him.
Yeah.
At all.
What's how I feel about Tim Winton as well. Like, he writes, obviously, Australian fiction about surf life and all. I'm like, I'm married to a surfer. Like,
I'm
in
it. It's just, I want to escape from that kind
of
life.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I was a little bit hesitant when you came to me and you were like, I think we should read this book. I was like, Australian fiction, I just don't know. Especially as well because it's so much about flowers, the language of flowers. I instantly was like, oh, like, this is something my nana would read. This isn't something I necessarily would read.
Yeah.
But then you showed me this little segment on Gardening Australia, which I will put in the link to it in the show notes. Although you can just find it on ABC iView.
Yeah.
And I was amazed by
her story.
Yeah. And she actually, so she lives on the Gold Coast, which is where we're based.
Yeah.
Which I automatically was like, wow, oh my gosh.
I know, same. So I was like, oh, she actually lives here. Yeah.
And she spoke so beautifully. Yeah, she also hosts Back to Nature on ABC as well, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's so educated in flowers.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was so surprised how much I actually really enjoyed this book.
Yeah, yeah.
I really surprised myself. I remember messaging you and being like, what the hell? I really like this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I love this book.
Yeah,
which is wild because it talks about Australia.
Yeah.
It's wild, but I love it. Like, I really loved it.
Yeah.
I, in particular, though, I loved probably the first half of the book.
Yeah, I would say that. And I think, you know, obviously, we're always trying to be very positive with our reviews and everything on this podcast. And I think for a debut novel, this was amazing. And she is meant to be a writer. Like she said in her ABC iView that since she was 3 years old, she wanted to be a writer. And you can really see that with the way she speaks and the way she holds herself and just the way she writes. She's meant to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so excited to read more of her work when it comes out because I've, you know, found an Australian author that I really like.
Yeah.
And I think she will just continue to just get better and better and better. But I think the last half, now whether this was purposefully done or not, the last half was a bit like chaotic in like, what, you know, what's going on? Like what's happening? And I think maybe that might have been Alice's journey.
Yeah, there were a few, I don't know if I would say chaotic.
Yeah, it's probably a strong word, yeah.
But I see what you mean, though. There are a few loose ends that we don't really get tied up,
like
necessarily.
Like too many characters a little bit.
But we discussed it, though. We sat down before recording this to try and figure out our thoughts. And I don't know if maybe it's just meant to be such an accurate, realistic representation of, you know, coping and dealing with trauma.
Yeah.
It just seems like up until about three, like a third of the way through, actually, we get like a good progression of this storyline and, you know, secrets, you know, surface that have been hidden for years, and we get some answers. And that sort of progressed really well, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought I was constantly interested. You know, yeah, but then I don't know, we sort of reach this point where it just peters out and I think she becomes comfortable.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just I wanted a bit more drama at the end.
I think so. I needed
a few more answers there.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it is one of those things, like, was that how it was meant to go? Are we meant to still want the answers? But,
Are we left, like...
In life, you don't always get the answers.
Exactly.
That's why life can be so unfair.
Yeah. An example would be, not to give anything away, but there is a fire at the end, and you're not really sure who was responsible for that fire.
You're not even 100% sure. I'm trying to word this, but who was affected by the
fire? Who was affected, yeah. And whether that's purposefully done, maybe it is, you know?
Yeah, it might be like a Christopher Nolan Inception, you know, wheel spinning at the end. Yeah. Will it tip over?
Will it tip over?
We don't know.
Just something I want to touch on, actually, is that this is very exciting news, and I'm very excited for Holly. Mm. I think this is like something that she would have made any author almost cry with unbelievable, you know, because this is her debut novel, so this is a huge thing. This book has actually been picked up to be made into a show by Amazon Prime, starring Sigourney Weaver, and it's going to be a 7-part series that follows this life. And I think that's being more and more done, because what I'm finding is like books now are becoming series more than a movie.
Yeah,
like that's really, you know, with The Witcher, you know, Shadow and Bone. Like, we're getting a lot. Big Little Lies.
Big Little Lies, Normal People.
Normal People, Nine Perfect Strangers, you know.
Yeah, there are a lot.
So I think this is really, really exciting. And I just want to read something that she actually said in an interview. She said, "I mostly wrote The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart thinking that no one other than me would ever read it. I wanted my novel to find its people. I was driven by a deep, aching desire for connection, to use my voice to roar like I used to do on bushwalks as a child, yelling cooey, or I should do it, shouldn't I? Cooey! It's an Australian thing. Out into the Australian bush, waiting with breath held to hear someone else, unknown and unseen to me, but on the same track, yell cooey back. I'm here. You're not alone. It's what I wanted to feel in my writing. It's the feeling I wanted Alice and her story to give others. This is my wildest dream, seeing my first novel, Alice's Story, be brought to life on screen and for a global audience on Amazon Prime."
That's massive.
I know.
And I'm really excited to...
Yeah, I can't wait to see it, to be honest.
I am interested, though, to see how Sigourney Weaver would do an Australian accent.
I know, same. That's exactly what I thought, too, because that's a very difficult accent to do.
Mm.
I mean, every, like, movie I've seen with, like, an American actor, I'm like, that's not it. Honey,
that's not it. That's not it, girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that'll be interesting, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it would be really cool.
Yeah.
But I like what she said about, you know, just in that, like, I'm here and, like, not wanting to be alone, because this novel really was about connection. And, you know, like, connecting, if you've been in a situation where you've been, like, had trauma or grief or domestic abuse, like, there is this feeling of being really alone in that. And to have a lot of those instances in this book, if you've been in that situation, you'll get it. Like, you understand, this is what happens. Mm-hmm. Like, you disassociate from the trauma, you use coping mechanisms. I think the flowers were a way to, like, cope, like, the language.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't communicating properly, so she communicated through flowers instead of actually being like, hey, something's fucking wrong with me, you know what I mean? So I think people who have been through some pretty rough trauma will actually find a lot of solace in this novel. I certainly did.
Now that we've brought up the emotional abuse, I really struggle. I feel like, so there is physical abuse, domestic violence, but that wasn't as triggering for me as opposed to the sort of emotional abuse that was happening.
Yeah, the manipulation.
Yeah, and the like turmoil that Alice was in inside her own mind about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get a lot of internal monologue.
Yeah.
About how she's feeling and her, again, trying to process these things that she doesn't fully understand why someone would be hurting her.
Exactly, yeah.
So I want to read something just to give people an idea of what's going on inside Alice's head.
Yeah.
Because if you are easily triggered by, you know, emotional abuse and, feeling quite isolated or, you know, people not believing you, you thinking that you're the one in the wrong.
Yeah, which is very common.
Common with victims. Absolutely, yeah. I just feel like, we have a duty to tell people about that. Because I was really quite shocked when I got to it.
Yeah.
I messaged you and I was like, ooh.
Girl.
Yeah. Damn. Okay. Alice nodded slowly, a flushing fool. What was wrong with her? It was all in her head. She was making the man a monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like, you're not, he is.
Yeah, he is a monster. You are not making him anything.
Oh, the whole, like, apology as well. Like, you know, oh, I'm sorry I did this.
Yeah,
like, oh,
I don't know what came over me.
Yeah, I don't know what came over me.
And there, there's that for it's a smallish period of time. We do have this rhetoric of, like, she's in the wrong. She's doing the wrong thing. He's right. Everyone will believe him. They won't believe her. And it just is, it's quite intense. Yeah. So I just think it's worth warning people about that.
I think it's interesting as well because her mother is in a abusive relationship with the father.
Yeah.
So she's like repeating her mother's mistakes, I guess, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
Don't want to say mistake because people find themselves in all kinds of different situations, but she's living the life that her mother lived, basically. And I think she's really struggling with that as well. Like, she's kind of reflecting on that, like, her, you know, everything goes back to your childhood at the end of the day. And she finds herself in the same position that her mum was in as well.
So bringing it back to the flowers, because obviously they're such a massive part of this story. I loved that this book kind of read like an ode to the idea that words aren't always the best avenue to go down, but it also shed light on the fact that some things can't, some things you have to say with words. Things can't be hidden or kept to yourself, like some things you do need to get out. But she really highlighted the power of nature and the Australian landscape, which I liked, and romanticized the Australian landscape, which to me was such a big thing because, you know, like we said, I don't want to hear about the Yatala drive-ins. It's a dingy place. I love it. Don't get me wrong. But it is, like, it's a dingy place. It's not romanticized. Well, you could romanticize it, but it's not romanticized in Trent Dalton's book.
No. Beginning... Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I was going to say at the beginning of each chapter, she actually has, like, a little thing of, like, you know, the Sturt Desert Pea, for example.
Yeah, we get a little definition, basically, of the books. I see you've got that page open. Do you want to read a couple of those?
It's just towards the end, like, when she's writing down, like, her notes. But, like, you know, just for what's the example? Like, she, you know, the vanilla lily, for example, is the ambassador of love. The thorn box means girlhood to her. So... there's just, in each chapter, there's like a flower and then she describes what that flower means to her. So it's kind of like the language of flowers, like that book that we were talking about before. But she takes her own personal meaning. Alice takes that meaning, you know, like for the Sturt Desert Pea. And she actually talks about this in ABC iView. So the Sturt Desert Pea means have courage, take heart, because... once the Sturt Desert Pea is planted, it can die really easily, but once it grows roots, it's impossible.
Yeah, and I like that it sort of, it prefaces or foreshadows what, you know, it gives us a little bit of context about what might be happening in that chapter.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for example, you know, unrequited love, heartbreak, courage, and adventure. Yes. Things like that. And I did look at some reviews because I love stalking Goodreads before we do a review.
Yeah.
And a lot of people didn't understand the flower references. They found that really tricky.
Yeah. But we're Australian, we get it though.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I didn't think it was overly complicated.
I don't think so either.
You have a flower and it says have courage. We understand that she's going to either need courage in this next chapter or she's going to find courage
in the chapter.
I didn't find that.
No, I found it easy.
Sometimes some of the definitions were quite complicated and confusing. But it, I don't know. It's kind of there to be a guide, but it doesn't confuse you to the point of not understanding that next chapter at all.
I just want to say as well, like, the illustrations in this book are really beautiful. Each chapter has, like, its, like, the flower that particular chapter focuses on.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool because a lot of books don't do that, obviously.
Yeah. I also need to mention that they do acknowledge the artist. The
illustrator,
The illustrator who does the illustrations on the cover and the internal ones, and we'll put that in the show notes. Because we're both from creative fields and we love highlighting that.
Yeah.
So many books don't mention who does the illustrations, which really surprises me.
Yeah.
Look, continuing on with the talk of flowers.
Yeah.
Holly, so at the end of the book, we sort of get like a ingratitude section where she basically acknowledges all the people who have helped her create this story. And I found it really interesting that she's very open about the fact that we obviously hear a lot of first people stories from, you know, Aboriginal people out in Kilipajara.
I know.
Don't know if I'm going to say that right, but Kilipajara.
Yeah, that's correct.
And we get all these, like, beautiful stories that I loved hearing about.
Yeah.
And she basically says that, you know, she either was told those stories by the people of that culture, that community, or she took inspiration from a story that had been shared with her.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really great that she went out and found people who were willing to share these stories with her that she could then use in the book.
A lot of women empowerment as well.
Yeah, through these stories. There's a lot of stories about, especially the indigenous women of Kilipijara. Yeah. They have a lot of stories about this crater.
Crater,
where all these flowers grow.
I think
it's like a national park, basically.
Yeah, I just want to mention as well, like, in Australia, and this is probably true for a lot of Indigenous cultures around the world, but storytelling is a huge, huge sacred part of Aboriginal culture.
Yeah.
And because they didn't have the written word, like, you know, like a lot of cultures had wrote illustrations and whatnot, they relied on passing down knowledge through stories, which is why a lot of that knowledge is actually lost, unfortunately, in our culture. So I really loved that Holly did this, because it's not often, unfortunately, in Australian literature that we see a lot of references to Indigenous.
I was just going to say that. It was actually surprising.
Like, I've read Dark Emu and a couple of other Indigenous books and love them. And I think that's, like, probably the most Australian fiction that I've leaned towards, because it's something that I don't know about. Whereas, like, surfing, I'm like, well, I, you know, who cares?
Yeah. Also funny, because I feel like in primary school, there were a lot of picture books based on Indigenous stories.
I never got this growing up.
I did, but then it kind of seemed to peter out a bit when you got older.
Yeah, I never got this. I grew up in a country town, though. That's probably why.
Maybe, yeah. But, yeah, you know, you could really tell that she put in a lot of effort to make sure she was telling...
doing justice to these stories.
Doing justice to those stories. And, like, you could definitely sense the respect for Indigenous Australians, First Nations people. Yeah,
absolutely.
In creating these, like, wonderful stories that highlighted, empowerment and beauty of women.
Yeah.
And the power of nature and, you know, the Australian landscape.
Yeah. I definitely saw the Australian landscape differently with how she described it.
Yeah.
Because quite often, because we live here, we don't really,
it's
Australia, you know, we see it all the time. I mean, the Gold Coast is beautiful, let's be honest. The hinterland especially. But it was quite magical to read of the descriptions, wasn't it? Yeah.
And so many, you know, even on the back of the book, what do we see? The Sydney Morning Herald did a dedication. They said, "Delicate and dark as a fairy tale, Ringland's storytelling is driven by an undimmed sense of wonder at the darkness and light, the damage and love in people."
Oh, that's so true.
And it's so true. Her writing was, magical, and it felt like you were reading a fairy tale almost.
Yeah, it was whimsical, wasn't it?
It was almost whimsical about Australia. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I really surprised myself because I thought I wouldn't
like
it.
Same. Yeah.
So, were there any standout quotes for you, Hayley, that you, and I feel like there are going to be some, that you loved?
Well, I mean, yes and no, because it wasn't so much standout quotes for me. Like, there was a lot where just the way she wrote description-wise, like when she, for example, was physically abused, Alice, she disassociated from that moment when she was pushed into a door. And she was focusing on, like, the dust in the corner. And the way she wrote that was very, very well done, because when you're in traumatic situations, you do dissociate from reality as a protection kind of thing. And that's where you lose memory and whatnot, which is, I think, in a way, is why the book was so, like, you know, like, kind of not all over the place, but just kind of everywhere towards the end, because Alice was trying to make sense of, like, what was going on and find herself again, her story. So I more had themes of, like, the way she did things. So another example is when Alice is little, she's friends with this boy, and how do I pronounce his name?
Oggie.
And he leaves flowers in her gumboots, and it's so beautiful. It's this beautiful childlike, like, love, or just liking someone, like a crush almost.
Yeah. And it was sweet.
It's very sweet
and whimsical.
And there's this really beautiful line where he talks about how he left flowers, like petals, around his the mum's house to like make, you know, to help her not crying.
Yeah.
But she didn't appreciate it. And something about that just really touched me.
Yeah. That childlike mentality of, once again, people not telling you things and, you know, kids going out and trying to find a solution to a problem.
Yeah.
But it being seen as immature, not helpful.
Yeah.
So
I do have, like, for me, it's more like the whole book is a quote in a way, because it was so, like we're saying, so whimsical, and there were these really beautiful themes, but there was those particular ones that really stood out for me, like the way she wrote about those scenes were really beautiful, like particularly like the domestic violence was as intense as it was, like she did it so well, because I know that Holly has probably been through it herself, so she really was able to do it justice.
Yeah. Reading it, you can definitely tell that...
Yeah, this is very intimate for her.
Yeah, for sure.
I think a lot of healing would have happened with her writing this book.
Yeah. Probably.
But you've obviously... Maddie's like dog-eared the whole book. The next half an hour is just going to be her reading
quotes. Yeah, me just like flicking desperately through all the pages being like...
Maybe do top three.
Oh, let's do top three. I think I've only got two or three.
Okay.
So this quote, just, you know, for a little bit of context, something traumatic, one of the traumatic events has just happened to Alice, and she's kind of trying to make sense of the...
Do you want to say which one? Give it away? No?
No.
I don't think we can.
No, I don't think we can. That's a fair chunk in.
Oh, is it? Okay. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Okay. Stretching an arm behind her seat, she reached into her bag for her books, choosing to ignore that they'd come from June and focusing instead on them belonging to her. Alice tugged from the bag the first one her fingertips touched and almost smiled at the sight of it. A perfect comfort. Clutching it, Alice took solace from its solid, sturdy shape, its reliable straight edges, its papery smell, its beckoning story, and its hard cover, bearing an image she'd spent countless hours studying, of a girl with her name who fell into a strange and wonderful land but still found her way home.
Oh my gosh, Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. And I love that imagery of this child who's just suffered something extremely traumatic, feeling lost. You know, she has all these emotions going through her head and she doesn't understand any of them.
Yeah.
And she's clutching to the one thing that she can make sense of, which is books. And I mean, like, I don't know about anyone else, but as a kid, like, books are such a great form of escapism. And, you know, I remember having my favourite books when I was a kid and reading them whenever I felt sad or, you know, like, they are such a comfort. They bring you so much comfort.
I think with Alice as well, though, like, in this moment through her childhood, she is relying on books as a way to cope with her emotional trauma.
Yeah.
And obviously that's reflected throughout the novel where Alice doesn't really communicate effectively with what she's going through because she's so used to not doing that. Like as a child, she was taught that books were her way to find comfort, the comfort that she wasn't getting from other people, like that external validation. So it's very true, like that quote of like, you know, she is escaping in a way, and you do use books as escapism. But I think for Alice, it comes from that, you know, like she's trying to figure out what is going on, you know.
Yeah.
Make sense of her trauma, make sense of her life as a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
Big decisions for a 9-year-old.
So Alice has just found a river.
So the context is Alice finds a river.
She grew up by the sea. The sea is a very big part of her life. And now she's, had to move, to a new place out sort of more in the country. And she finds this river.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of told not to go near it, at the beginning, but she does anyways.
Lol.
Yeah. Lol. So she's just jumped into the water basically. The sweet and absolute absence of salt shocked her. Her eyes didn't sting. She exhaled bubbles and watched them rise and pop. The heart of the river beat in Alice's ears. Her father told her once that all water eventually ran to the same source. A new question bloomed. Could she swim downriver through time all the way home? I love that.
That's beautiful.
This is another moment where we're seeing, you know, she's struggling so much with, you know, her emotions, and she's trying to cope, and we see that childlike fairy tale mentality.
Yes, yes.
You know,
come out.
Yeah, come to play, where she just wants to be home and she wants to find a way home.
Exactly. And, like, it's quite a confusing moment, I think, as well, because she has a very tumultuous relationship with her father, where she loves him but she also hates him. And, yeah, like, obviously the start of the book, what I read previously, was, like, she wants to set her father on fire. And that's, like, not a joke. Like, she literally wants to set her father on fire. And yeah. But then she is also confused because her father then sometimes, like, shows her affection, you know. So it's this weird...
Which brings me to my next quote.
Oh, which brings
so me... So glad. That was such a wonderful segue, Hayley.
What a segue.
Hayley. Okay. The only signs she would need to read would be in the sky, rather than the shadows and clouds that passed over her father's face, alerting her to whether he was a monster or the man who turned a gum tree into her writing desk.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the same with when... Okay, so then that kind of goes into when she's older and she gets into this relationship. It's kind of similar because she's like, you know, gets abused, for lack of a better word.
Mm.
But then she's also like, sees this affectionate side of him sometimes, like her partner. So there's this like, she's reliving
her
childhood.
And he's apologetic.
And he's apologetic, exactly.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, my last one. My last quote.
Oh,
sorry, this
gosh.
Is four.
Gosh.
I'm sorry. But it's just...
It's all right.
There's too many good ones. Yeah, I did dog ear so much of this
book.
You
did. The whole book is dog ear.
And I don't even feel bad. I know a lot of people don't like dog ear, but
yeah,
I feel
fine.
Like that's only right. That's only if it's like a library book,
I've
right?
I've seen people on TikTok like highlight and annotate like
underline.
Yes. I couldn't.
Yeah. I know, right?
I could never.
No, I could never do that.
No.
But dog ear, just so I can go back and, you know, there's something.
See that quote on the page.
Yeah,
yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
Okay, my last one. And this is, so this quote's actually quite late in the book, but it's, Alice is reflecting on a conversation she had when she was a child.
Uh-huh.
What do you think you'd like to be when you grow up, Bun? Alice's mother had her hands in a pot of fertilizer among the ferns in her garden. Her face was obscured by her gardening hat. Alice didn't have to give it much thought. A butterfly or a writer, she replied, smiling. Anything that kept her close to her mother's garden or between the pages of a book.
Yeah, beautiful.
Again.
Yeah.
Whimsical, fairy tale.
Fairy tale, yeah. And Holly, like, I know since watching that Gardening Australia episode that she, like, that was literally probably how she felt growing up as well.
Yeah.
Like, she said ever since she was 3 years old she wanted to be a writer.
Yeah.
You know.
I loved, honestly, she does remind me, this Alice character reminds me so much of Matilda, where she's...
Doesn't it? Yeah.
She's... You know, she is trying to fix the problems in her life. She's
mm-hmm.
trying to fix the men in her life.
Mm-hmm.
She's
mm-hmm.
trying to educate herself. She's trying to get answers for herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's very isolated and she's
yeah.
trying to find who she is in this world, who her family is, what her story is.
Yeah.
But she's also a child and
mm.
she believes in fairy tales and, yeah, she's whimsical and silly at times.
Silly, yeah. That's
and
it, yeah.
I love that, like, juxtapositioning.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say something yeah. interesting that you said before this podcast was actually how we didn't get really a description of Alice.
Yeah, a few times we... I'm sure... I don't know if maybe I'm just
no,
stupid.
It's, no.
Maybe I'm just
maybe
dumb.
Maybe I'm just an idiot.
But, yeah, so, like, I know that we do get some description. She's a brunette.
Yeah.
Got long, kind of like straggly brunette hair.
Yeah.
But we don't get a lot of description about
no.
her. It's more so about the experiences that have shaped her as a person. And a lot more time is spent describing the landscape around
Absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I found it really interesting because I kind of got, and I know you haven't read this book, but I got Where the Crawdad Sings
You always say this.
From this book.
Yeah.
I did. Because, but I feel like Delia Owens, who wrote Where the Crawdad Sing, she gave a lot of description to Kaya, the main character's appearance.
Okay.
We get a lot of description about that.
Okay.
Probably equally to the description of the marshland where she lives.
Okay.
So it's pretty balanced, you know, in that regard.
Yeah.
But it's very similar. It's as if Where the Crawdads Sing was based in, like, country New South Wales.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, in like the 60s, I think, maybe.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny, but it's because like you are romanticizing this location that hasn't really been romanticized before. You've got this main character who is so independent and is trying to fix everyone around her, but she's also so vulnerable and young and a child and doesn't know what she's doing.
That book deals with similar themes as well, doesn't it?
It's very similar. And I like that we get this Australian version of it. You know, they do have that similar theme of this one female character who's a bit lost, trying to find her way. There's romances along the way. There's obviously not like a murder like in Where the Crawdads Sing.
Oh, okay. But yeah, of course.
There's like a
they could be well, technically there is murder.
Well, maybe Where the Crawdads Sing kind of flicks back to like what's the word? Like a criminal.
Yes.
What am I trying to say? Like a case, a something case.
Yeah. Or like a criminal investigation.
Yes.
Yeah, a criminal investigation.
I feel like that's not as much happening in this one, but kind of similar in some ways.
I just want to say quickly, if you can hear this thumping music, it's because my neighbour has now decided that he wants to play Tool at the top of his line, which is fine. Which is fine, but this is real life.
That could be our like intro theme. Yeah. Some house music.
There's some house music going on.
That'll really go with our vibe.
Yeah.
Hayley.
Yes, Madeline.
Who do you think would enjoy this book?
I think this book is definitely for an older audience. Like I wouldn't reckon. Well, I mean, you know, younger you could appreciate this kind of literature, but I think a lot of the themes come with experience of life, and so I would probably recommend this book for people who are a little bit older, like adult, you know. And to be honest, I would recommend this book to people who have been through something, because I think there is a lot of healing in reading another person's story. And like Holly said, you know, she wanted that connection. She wanted to be seen. She wanted to be heard. I'm here is what she says, you know. Mm. And I think that's the same for a lot of women who have been in traumatic experience, especially domestic violence, is that you feel very alone. And when these stories are told and they're empowering, it makes other women feel empowered to share their story as well and be vulnerable enough to, well, not vulnerable, like, but powerful enough to be like, I'm here. I experienced this. I survived. This is my story. And this is how I can help other women.
Yeah. This is my story. And I'm taking control of the narrative.
And yes, that's so true. That's perfect. Yeah. I'm taking control of my narrative, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of power in that. So I would recommend this book for, I probably recommend this book for women. But I think men would enjoy this book if they've probably, you know, if they've got high empathy. Because it is a story that requires, I think, a lot of empathy.
It does, that's for sure. Yeah. I think, going back to what you said about the age bracket, I definitely think that a younger audience, not only does it deal with some dark themes, but it also, I just think a younger audience might not appreciate the flower
references. I just think as well, it's got some pretty heavy themes that I think require a bit of like experience in life. Yes. Like I don't think a teenager is necessarily going to maybe understand a lot of like the really heavy themes, nor would they probably be interested in reading a book of this magnitude, maybe. So in saying that, obviously, you know, everyone enjoys books for different reasons, but this is definitely an adult book, like for adult women, I would say, for women who have been through things in life.
And we are, like, I think it's important to say, if you are hesitant because you have read Australian fiction before, and it, because I remember before I read this, I wouldn't have reached for it.
No,
we've got a puppy breaking into the
studio.
I never would have reached for that book, but I'm so glad I did with this one.
Same.
It really is worth it. A painful, sometimes happy, but sometimes very dark fairy tale.
Metaphor for life, really.
It really is. And I think maybe that's why it was a bit hard to get through.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to be fair in saying that, like, I would probably give this book a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, yeah.
I give most books a 5. I did find it hard getting to the end, pushing through to the end.
Yes.
But I just want to make it clear that that's got nothing to do with Holly's writing, I don't think.
The writing is a five. I think it's more a
personal thing.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I needed a little bit more closure.
Yeah, I agree.
A little bit more,
Tying the little loose threads together, yeah.
Tying all the loose threads together, but again,
yeah,
that is life.
It's so beautiful. And that's life. Yes, exactly right. And you know what? Like, this is probably the most in-depth podcast that we've actually done on a book, because the themes are so heavy, and it's an Australian story, so obviously we're talking about it quite in depth. And but you know, all the previous podcasts we've had, we've been like, this book is really great, and like talked really strongly about that.
I also think that a lot of the books we've reviewed have already been bestsellers. Which
is an international bestseller.
Yeah. But not I feel like not to the same extent as maybe like A Six of Crows, which
Has
the Shadow and Bone.
Yeah.
I just feel like fantasy. I feel like some general fiction, you know, contemporary fictions can get a bit lost in the bestseller list, whereas
fantasy always seems like, to be up there.
Everyone knows A Court of Thorn and Roses, everyone knows Shadow and Bone.
Yeah, yeah, Invisible Life of Addie LaRue.
Yeah.
So this is,
but I feel
an in-depth
like,
book.
Yeah, and yeah, so
it's a thought-provoking book, I would say. Like,
yes.
Rather than the fantasy. Fantasy's like whimsical, you know, oh, these things happened, whereas this book is very like, it's like kind of like 138 dates.
There's a dog, a whining puppy. Oh,
like 138 dates talked about like similar themes of like, well, that was not, it's not as, you know, not as heavy, obviously, that book, but
no, and that was very much quite raw and
vulnerable,
a little bit more like blunt to the point.
Yeah,
I'd
true,
say
true,
it wasn't
true.
It wasn't whimsical in the same sense.
It was real life.
Well, yeah, it was non-fiction.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, at the end of the day, I loved the book. I was really pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah.
I would recommend it to a lot of people.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah, I really loved it. It was a breath of fresh air in Australian fiction.
Yeah, it was something I haven't read before, and it is a breath of fresh air in Australian fiction because, you know, like we said, a lot of the time we find Australian fiction to be not as exciting as other books that we've read because we are Australian, so we kind of go, well, you know, I'd rather read about,
I wonder if other people feel that way,
England.
I wonder if someone who lives in London feels that way about London.
Yeah, that's interesting,
right?
Do you still romanticize
New York City,
London?
Like,
yeah,
so interesting.
Yeah, thoughts to ponder.
But yeah, loved it.
Yeah,
great
same.
Book. So excited to read anything else that
she produced. Yeah,
yeah,
she
that
produces.
Holly Ringland comes out with.
Yeah.
And also so excited for this mini series.
I know. I think it will be amazing. I think it's going to be a really good show because obviously that, you know, what's that one? The Nine Perfect Strangers and Little Flies Everywhere. And what's
Big
that?
Little
other?
Lies?
Big Little Lies. That's the one that dealt with a domestic violence relationship as
Big
well.
Big Little Lies. I feel like same thing along these lines where it is hard to get through some parts.
Yes.
But it can be done in a really good way. That
justice, I guess. Well,
Justice. Yeah.
And a book like this really needs to be a 7-part series. So I'm really, really thankful that they did that.
A movie just wouldn't be enough.
Wouldn't be enough, yeah.
There is a lot of, there's quite the journey that we go on.
It is, isn't it?
We go to a few different locations, a few different types of sceneries. We see ocean, we see, you know, bush, we see outback.
Yeah.
And
the flowers are such a huge component of that. So it'll be interesting in the series whether they have illustrations come out on the screen, maybe for like each episode focuses maybe on a flower.
Interesting.
And so, you know what I mean?
It will be interesting to see how they incorporate those flowers because
we
do get the definitions at the start of each chapter. That's a really good point.
Yeah. How
focused. You might have to contact them and be like, hi, I just want to make that you are doing the definitions justice.
Just making sure.
Well, just want to clarify.
Is there a lot of landscape? There needs to be. Do we see the desert?
We run a pretty successful podcast with like 11 listeners.
With one listener. Her name's Brooke.
Shout out to Brooke.
No, shout out to Laura as well.
Oh, Laura
that's it. Laura. Thanks, Laura. Can you share it, please?
blow us up, Laura.
That's actually a good point to make. We are available on almost all podcast platforms now, and yeah, it would be great if you are listening to leave a lovely review.
Yes, or ask questions or anything. Or yeah, like, have ask you read questions. The book?
Yes, let us know what you thought. You can get in touch with us on Instagram. You can get in touch with us. We have an email in our show notes, and also on in our Instagram bio.
Yeah,
get in touch. Let us know if you felt the same. If you've read this book, let us know if we encouraged you to get this book.
Yeah.
Let us know if we did the opposite, because that would be really good to know
actually,
as well.
Actually, that would be cool. Yeah, yeah. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah, I won't lie. Actually, my roommate Brooke listened to The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, our podcast, and she was like, she listened to 15 minutes and was like, oh, this is great, because I know that I don't want to read this book.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I just don't know if that's a compliment or not. But she was like, no, but like, you've given me so much background about this book, and now I've made this decision that it's just not for me.
Okay.
Which is fair enough.
Well, that's a shame, because I love the Elizabeth Life.
I know, I was like, I'm dead inside, but okay.
Maybe I have to kick you out. Give me back my book.
Give me back my book. She's not a fantasy person. As much as it makes me sad, I wish she would.
People can't say that. Okay, when people say, I'm not a fantasy reader, it's like, okay, look, there's Lord of the Rings, and then there's like...
And then there's Invisible Life. And then there's
It's not the same playing field. Completely different. Completely different.
Different ball game. Yeah. You can't not even like, the same ball game.
Yeah. Oh, I hate fantasy. It's like, dude, we're not talking about Lord of Rings.
No,
like, it's
no, not no, the same. No. Very
this
different.
Is diet fantasy.
Yes. And speaking of Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, I've recommended that book to so many people.
Yeah,
and
same.
I love hearing so many people enjoy it.
I know, same. But it's so jarring when people are like, oh, I didn't like it. And I was like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, like, oh.
Did you appreciate the writing, like, at least?
Yeah, like,
I get it, though, because, like, I have
read
some...
Do you have a heart? Do you have a soul?
Do you have a soul? I get it, though, because, like, some, you know, obviously books aren't for everyone, but it is quite a slow book, yeah. Like, you know, like, it's not a plot.
It is,
strong,
but it's beautiful.
Like, it's, like, spending time with the characters.
Yeah. Honestly, coming back to The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart, it's beautiful.
Coming back to the book we're meant to be
talking
about.
Yeah, sorry. A bit of a tangent there. thanks if you're still with us, if you didn't drop off. But, yeah, it's a beautiful book. It's beautifully written, and I think you will enjoy reading it.
I think so, too. Yeah. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, please let us know. But look, if you are still
anyway,
with us, hi, thank you so much, firstly. Secondly, you should totally come back next week because it's going to be our first, oh no, this week is our first. We're in the first week of October.
Oh, yes, yes, okay, yeah,
I'm
yeah,
getting
yeah.
my, I'm getting disoriented.
Where are we, yeah.
Yes, this is our first book of October. Next week, we are going to be jumping into Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. We obviously talked a lot about that book in this episode.
Yeah, drawing comparisons.
There are a few comparisons we can draw. And we think it would be cool to do that one next week.
I think so, yeah.
I've already read the book. Hayley has not.
I have not. Maybe.
I'm so excited, though, for you to read it because it is
I
such
will
a
read
great
it,
book.
But like maybe if I don't read it in time for next week's podcast, you could be like, when you say, Hayley, have you read this? I'll be like, no.
We'll see. We'll see if we have our first.
I'm halfway
no.
through. Our first no.
In all honesty, I've never met anyone who did not like Where the Crawdads Sing.
I know. My mum loved it as well. So
yeah, it's a beautiful
book.
Yeah,
I really need to read it.
Yeah. Well, we will see you then.
Yeah.
Thank
anyway,
you for joining
thank
us.
You.
See you next week.